Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey, everybody, this is Spike Ferguson from Spike's Car Radio. We're out here in the porch of at the Malibu Kitchen at the Malibu Country Mart every weekend doing podcasts. My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. We're going to have Jeremy Piven. We're going to have Chris Hardwick. See you soon on Spike's Car Radio.
I think he's over-projecting for a podcast.
And I love to over-project for podcasts. Join me every week at PodcastOne.com and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate, get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for shooting us a tweet, man, over at CarCast.
Yeah.
Adam Carolla. That's Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea over there. I think some
Hello.
Guy sent us one today or something. Said he was wrenching on a German car.
Yeah.
Listening to CarCast.
Love that.
Lots of stuff going on. We're talking 24 hours of Le Mans.
Yeah, we were kind of hopping in back and forth watching what we could.
Yeah, we were watching when we could. I'll tell you, they found a way through the cameras in the cars and all the stuff and all the stories and everything to really keep it going.
Yeah.
The Aston Martin won, right?
Yeah, in its class.
In its class, of course.
Yeah.
I didn't know Aston Martin was a player. Like I know the time I went to Le Mans.
Yeah.
They won in a DB9. Really okay. Cool that the Aston Martin racing green. Nothing better if you look at that, like, I don't know, 05, 06, something in there, 04, 05, Aston Martin DB9.
They still run that color, I think, but with
yeah.
The yellow around the grill. And
right. It's a great look. And then in winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman doc, you see the guy died in an Aston Martin.
Yes.
That was a Vantage, I think. That was a V8 Vantage for some reason, I think.
Patrick Dempsey was racing that year, right?
Right.
We talked to him about it.
Right.
His team was there, but he wasn't driving this year. Was there, yeah, with his team.
I did not know that. And so it seemed to me, just as a casual observer, that the defending champs were the Ford GTs. They seem to be the favorite. Again, I didn't go to Vegas and check, and I'm sure there's action on it on Vegas. Be interesting. Hey, Max Pata, see what the Vegas odds were before the thing in the GT category. They definitely have to take action on this. They'll take action on anything.
Why wouldn't you?
And the Ford GT, I would assume, so for me, I would assume Ford GT would be the favorite, and then second might either be Ferrari or the Porsche 911 team, and then
or Corvette team. That's pretty competitive.
I know. Right. I probably would have said Ford GT, Ferrari 911, Corvette, Aston Martin. That's probably how I would have laid it out.
All right.
So before the race, but to have Aston Martin then finish, I think 1 and 2 in that class.
No, they didn't. There
they
was
did
some,
one.
So you missed the ending. But Corvette was in the lead.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And it got a flat tire.
Yeah. And then that flat tire moved Aston Martin up to the lead and then the Ford GT into the number two spot.
Mm-hmm.
And the Corvette finished the race on a flat tire because
right.
They're like, why pull over now?
Mm-hmm.
and it was Aston Martin, Ford GT, and Corvette as 1, 2, 3 in that class,
right.
Which was interesting to see. First of all, it was cool to see that there wasn't like a huge gap between first and second and third. Like the flat tire changed the whole place.
With about 3 laps left,
yeah,
I think the Aston Martin was leading, but the Corvette caught up to him.
Yeah.
And I think he dove in on a right-hander, and he got a little out of shape. The Aston Martin dove in, or some one of them dove on the other guy, but it was one of those things where I learned it very early in my BMX bicycle racing days, which is when I did my first race, the BMX, you know, starts up on the hill, they drop the gate, you go down the thing,
yeah.
You go around the berm, you go over the tabletop jump or whatever it is. I was probably in 7th out of 9 or maybe 8 probably one from the land.
Yeah.
And as everybody was setting up for the big old high berm left hand sweeper, everyone started to like stop pedaling and drift out to the right. I was like, it was like the seas were parting. What are all these guys slowing down for?
Yeah.
And drifting off to the right. I'll just pedal my ass off and keep going straight. But it didn't work out because once I couldn't got to, I just shot out the other end of the berm.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't make the turn. And
oh, you kind of like what you did in your Red Bull car.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah.
But that was
in the coaster car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't on purpose.
No. That was bad information. But the point is, my point is, on that race, I think the vet went a little, just sort of stayed the line, and whoever, the Aston Martin or vice versa, just said, I'm going in. But when they came out, they weren't in great
shape. Yeah, and at one point, they did hit each other, but they hit, like, tire to tire. So there wasn't real damage. It was both.
Right. But they were speculating, is that how they flattened the, how'd they get the flat?
I don't remember exactly how he got the flat, and I think what happened was, because I missed some of it because we were switching over to watch the fight, was the Corvette still, I think, physically came in second, but missed a couple turns, like went through the rocks and didn't go through the, you know, didn't make the actual turn and gets penalized, like, you know, a second or something. And that puts the GT
up there. The guy drove through the chicane.
I think, because he couldn't get traction when your front left or whatever tire was out. It was a front wheel.
I can tell you from being inside a race car, it's so loud and you're not always sure what's going on around you. And this guy got a leak in his tire.
Yeah.
And he probably didn't know he had a leak in his tire. I may not have known.
Until he missed a turn, sure.
And then when he went to brake, that didn't work right. And he went, what the hell? And then he just went forward. That's that horrible feeling when you're in a car of not knowing what's going wrong, but something's clearly wrong.
And then just his experience eventually probably said, hey, I got a flat. Or the guys watching TV are like, you've got a flat. And because you can hear the announcers going, I think there's something wrong. Maybe it's a flat.
I would be curious. I'm guessing the technology is such that there's somebody in that pit with a computer that knows the tire pressure.
You think so, but every time the camera goes to the crew, they're all taking a nap.
They're napping.
maybe a pager goes off and the tires go flat, some kind of way to wake them up. But that wasn't the only the only class with some drama. You know, the Porsche won in LMP1,
mm-hmm.
right? Their prototype car won. But that car had issues, and it was in the pit getting worked on for an hour.
Yeah.
And Toyota was set to dominate everything.
Right.
Right? And Toyota comes in into a pit. The car is sitting there for a minute. I forgot the exact reason why. It was a yellow or something like that, and it gives them time to come in and pause for a second. And another driver walked over to the Toyota. Okay, the driver was wearing his driving suit and a helmet, walked over to the Toyota car and gave him a thumbs up, like, hey, Toyota's doing great, congratulations. But that guy's driving suit was orange, so he thought he was a track official,
mm-hmm.
and he gave him the thumbs up to go.
Mm-hmm.
So he started going, and his team's like, what are you doing? You can't go. And then they stopped him, and this sort of start and stop isn't normal on those type of prototype cars with the conventional engine and the clutch and the hybrid system. And what it did was it ended up heating up the clutch too much without enough time for it to breathe, and it burnt out the clutch. So 10 hours into the race, his clutch seizes up, and normally you'd be like, okay, once there's a problem with the car, if you can get it into the pit, the team can work on it. But if the car just gets stranded, then you're out. You're done. And he was too far from the pit. So Toyota was dominating. Somebody gave him a weird thumbs up in the pit, which there's video of somewhere, and then burn up a clutch, and then that was it, and that guy was out. And so even though Porsche was working on their car for an hour during the race, they ended up getting the lead and did great.
That's that's the nature of the 24-hour beast. Wasn't it Toyota that was or was Porsche that was heartbroken? Who was heartbroken last year?
Nissan.
Oh, Nissan. That's right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Nissan. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I always think about this because it's like, it's sort of like every major air catastrophe starts as like almost nothing, but it's just kind of chain of things that happen and ends up being a disaster. But it always starts off with like almost nothing. And they need to make a rule, which is, and you know, they have these rules like in baseball. There's nothing out on the outfield wall that's white because the baseball's white, and the hitter might lose it.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
And even when I pitched and I played Little League, I had a stupid green mitt. We called it the green weenie because it was probably just because it was cheap or something. I was left handed. It's like hard to find a mitt. And they wouldn't let me. I think it had white piping on it or something. They wouldn't let me pitch with it because you're not allowed to have a colored mitt when you pitch. There used to be a rule. Oh. Stupid. I don't know. It's distracting or something.
Even like for kids?
It's stupid. But the point is this. If the race officials are wearing orange, there shall be no orange jump fire suits. That's the rule.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. You know, somebody should have kind of figured that one out in advance, but
yeah,
they didn't, and now they did.
The whole story is weird. How the guy just like walked up to the window and a guy gave him a thumbs up and walked away, and the guy's like, "Oh, I guess it's time to go." Like,
well, that's
it's
the whole thing. When you're in that environment, you're just like looking for anything. Trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, what I'm saying is even the thought process of that other guy, the other team guy, like, so there's the car, and behind him, we're looking at this video, that's a real track official. Now watch what happens.
Right, so it's a real track official's wearing his orange.
This guy runs up. Hey!
Thumbs up. And not only does he do thumbs up, but he's leaning.
He's always saying go. It's just insane. Like, who...
It's great because he's leaning, and he doesn't give a wave off or anything. He just tells him to go.
And now everyone's confused. But where did this guy come from? I don't know who he is or what team he's on. But like, is he even near his own pit? How come the rest of his team's going, "Hey, where'd Bobby go?" He's like, "Oh, he's in the pit."
I don't
just
know.
Flagging the next guy down. It's weird.
It's weird, and it's funny because he gave him the thumbs up, and he did the thumb turn.
Yeah.
Like he went up and to the right. Like, hey, go ahead. Get going.
Yeah, you're good.
Also, I can tell you when you're in the car, one of your greatest concerns is like holding somebody up or not knowing what's going on. Like when you're
like
getting on the track or off the track. And a guy holding a beer wearing flip-flops could just like wave you on the track and you go, oh, okay, oh, yeah, all right, here we go, here we go. Like you always think you're going the wrong place or holding somebody up or not doing the right thing or whatever.
And that's been a thing forever, like in the 24-hour war, like all this controversy of pushing the car over the line, and like every time there's another rule. Another example is in this same race, LMP2, right?
Hold on. Tease it.
Yep.
I'll tell you about AMSOIL. That's right. Move beyond stock performance. AMSOIL, synthetic motor oil, combines top-tier synthetic technology with unique additives to protect up to 25,000 miles. 25,000 miles. Or 1 year in between oil changes. Shields engine from wear and deposits. Wear on pistons and cams lead to a loss of power. Let's not have that. All right. 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by the industry standard. Piston cleanliness, 93% above the industry standard. Tested in the field and on the track in extreme conditions. Check it out. Go online. Go to AMSOIL.com/carcast for more info. You know we love this stuff. AMSOIL, devoted to protection. All right. What is your...
All right. So LMP2, the other prototype class, the slightly slower class. The team was Jackie Chan DC Racing. Now, this is funny because DC Racing is David Chang. David Chang, who's like 27 or 28, when he was just starting racing maybe 7 years ago, he came here and he was a guest on CarCast. He was racing in America. And now he's running Le Mans.
Wow.
And he was at an event and met Jackie Chan, the actor, Jackie right. Chan. And they talked about their love of Steve McQueen. And Jackie's like, we need a race team someday. And here they are, like a year or two ago, they put a race team together. And the Jackie Chan DC Racing Team ends up getting first in their class.
Wow.
And second overall. Okay, with David Chang was they had a couple of cars.
What type of vehicle are they?
It's one of these prototypes. I don't know. You got to look it up. It's one of the, it's that name that we never Orica or something like that. Yeah. I didn't know what it was.
Weird name, right?
Yeah, it was a weird name,
right?
And then so the DC Racing teams were in first and third in their class, and David was in the third place car. And again, as far as the wacky rules, at one point during the race, we saw one of the cars it wouldn't start. So mm-hmm. what they do is they pull the bodywork off and they knock the starter. They basically just hit it with like a hammer and it kind of unseizes up the solenoid and gets the starter loose.
Right.
Well, the second place car that won and was on the podium after the fact, like a day later, they found a hole in the bodywork and like, what's this hole in here? And they said the starter was locked up. We drilled the hole in it. We shoved a rod in there. And we knocked the starter. And,
right.
And Le Mans officials said, you can't do that. You've modified the bodywork. You're disqualified. So they're out. So David Chang, as a driver and team owner, now is second in his class and third overall at Le Mans. And the other team, who is probably celebrating and happy, are out.
You know,
the little rules.
I got to tell you.
You shouldn't celebrate any race win for like 4 days after the event. Because someone's going to knock you off the podium.
You know, the rules, it's like when you hear about the boxer who tests positive for marijuana, and they're like, I got to strip him of his belt. You know, I just went 12 hard rounds, won the thing.
And he did it high.
And it's not performance enhancing.
Yeah.
And my whole thing is, for everything, it's like, you know, four-way stop sign in the middle of the desert. You know what I mean? There is the rule, and then there is the spirit of the rule. And it's like, you don't want anybody modifying the bodywork to get an advantage. And you don't want anyone taking performance-enhancing drugs as an athlete to get an advantage. But pot, not an advantage.
Yeah.
It is altering, but it's not an advantage. Drilling a hole in the Kevlar or the plastic or whatever they're pouring on there, not an advantage.
No.
Altering, but not an advantage.
Right.
So with the spirit of the rule, who cares?
Yeah. The most it would have done was probably shave a couple seconds off of their pit time because they didn't remove the bodywork and knock the starter or whatever. And I'm sure there's more details onto the actual story of how it all went down.
How big a hole do you think they drilled?
I don't know.
Just enough to get a rod?
2-3 inches, maybe?
Well, you don't even need that if you're just putting a rod
probably in there. Probably to see. Probably just like to look and shove a rod in there, you know? And maybe in the back where it's like, you know, or the side where it probably didn't make a difference. Probably caused more harm aerodynamically than unless they duct taped over it or something.
I would imagine they would have.
It's weird, and I'm sure there's more details about it, but rules are rules, I guess.
What do the Vegas odds have, Max Pata?
It's actually really, really hard to find a...
And thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But
Christ.
I have Toyota they're the top two, and then Porsche...
Yeah, we're looking in the GT class, though.
Okay.
I couldn't find that. In that class, though, Toyota was the favorite.
Or they just erase it off the internet or something.
I just
after
don't
the
get
event.
Porsche won in LMP1 and the overall winner, and it's great for them. But every single article and everything came out was Porsche wins, Porsche wins, Porsche wins. No love for the other classes at all. How about Aston Martin won as well?
That seems like a really big victory.
Also, that kind of seemed like the class we're most interested in.
And they won, in an 8, a V8 Vantage, not in a 12.
Yeah.
Not in a 9. And I don't know that Aston has won it since their DB9. I mean, I don't know if they've ever won it in an 8.
Yeah.
I think they won it in a 9, and I don't recall them winning an 8. Again, I don't follow it that closely.
And also, the other GT class, the one that's like one click down, I think Ferrari won that class. So how come there's not Ferrari wins? Ferrari wins.
I don't know.
How about a little love for the other categories, by the way, the other classes?
Well, it would be, is the next GT class down, is that just smaller fuel tank or something? I'm trying to think of what that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't really know.
What that is. The thing that's kind of fun for me is the Corvette has 550 horsepower. And I'm like, please, kids, I'm used to 850.
Yeah.
Man. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, speaking of Trans Am, your buddy, Tommy.
Yeah, Dreese.
Yes. He's out. He got in an argument. And I'm not sure how it went down, but his argument resulted in, I'm pretty sure, he's suspended for the season.
He's a man of passion.
Which, yes. Well, and this isn't the first time.
Tommy.
This is like the third.
Tommy won. All right. So there's four races. There's.
Yes.
All right, there's Willow Springs, then there's Fontana, then there's Portland, and then there's Coda.
There's four races in the West Coast series. He also runs the regular.
That is correct. He won, and I took third in the first race. Second race, I didn't want to pay for, so I didn't do it in Fontana. And then the third, unfortunately, I think we're going to be in Detroit.
Yeah.
We got stories. We'll do a podcast. We're going to be with the Fords and everything. So we got some really cool stuff. Chip Ganassi and guys like that.
I think that'll be cool.
So we got a lot of good stuff coming your way. I really would have liked to run Portland. Like Portland, I've always heard was a great track. I like Portland. I like that part of the country. It's kind of striking distance from here. But maybe we'll set our sights on Austin. And Coda.
Well, here's the thing is this Tommy being out kind of changes the rules. And, you know, of the six or seven or eight cars that were in the race, you're still like fifth in the points.
I'm in the running, man.
You're in the running. So you have a really good showing at Coda. You could.
Oh, we should look into it.
You could be like top four or so, you know. Top three or four of the points.
It'll be one. Well, remind me to look into it because I wouldn't mind. We got to find some sponsorship.
Yeah, we got to find some money.
All right. Those cars ain't cheap, man. It's about 50 grand a pop, right?
Yeah, well, Tommy's saving some money right now.
Physical altercation is what they're saying.
Is that what they're
physical
saying?
Physical altercation?
Yeah.
On the track?
That's what,
No. Afterward, he got in an argument with somebody, and I think he might have just shoved somebody.
This is their statement. After today's race, Tommy Dreese got into an altercation with another team, which became physical. Tommy had been suspended from the series before I got here and some other issues. He asked if he could come back to the series and did mend fences with a lot of people. But I was pretty clear with him at the first event that even though he was not under probation, he was under a high level of observation. Basically, he was under probation with me and needed to keep his nose clean. There was a situation at Road Atlanta with a corner worker that could have been a lot worse than it was. And today, Tommy had a physical altercation. You can talk trash and smack to each other as much as you want, but as soon as you lay a hand on somebody else, that becomes a completely different issue. Due to his actions, he's been suspended for the event and for the remainder of the series.
I don't think he was throwing punches, though. I think he just got a little heated and maybe just, you know, snapped a finger and maybe shoved somebody. I don't think he was throwing punches.
We're living in a world now where you just can't put your hands on anybody.
I don't think he Jeremy Clarkson the guy. Like, I don't think he just, like, full-on punched somebody. Like, I think it was a little
well,
shove.
The point
or
is,
he touched the ref.
It's opened up for me. So I'm going to get back in the series. I swear to God, I'm not kidding.
You got
to
run Tommy's car, though. It'll be like Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
You know, you got to run my car, Cole.
But it's going to be confusing because the people in the stands are going to be, is Tommy have AIDS? What's going on? Why is he going so slow?
Does he have AIDS?
He seems sick. He's barely moving.
What's he doing?
He just got passed by a car in Trans Am 3. It's a stock Scirocco. All right. Austin 30, Oklahoma City.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, man. What's going on?
I'm starting a power washing business, and I have a Jeep Grand Cherokee 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Got the transmission rebuilt,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be hauling like 2,500 pounds of water. So my question is, I don't have
so you got,
much money.
Sorry, you got the trailer with the tank on it.
Right.
Right.
Do I go for a used F-150 crappy pickup truck, or do I try to do this with my 200,000-mile Jeep Grand Cherokee?
I got to say, you know, like you have work clothes or painter's clothes or whatever, work truck, like the guys who try to keep their stuff nice but have to carry rebar in the back of it and stuff, it just it doesn't work. Like, just
you're towing this thing all the time? This is your job?
It's your job. Right? You're not going to want to unhook
it. Yeah, starting a business.
Yeah.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This isn't like a one-time thing.
I'm a firm believer in the Ford F-150 used. I mean, Rob, my guy, I think for like 10, 11 grand, got a really nice one.
Yeah, he's
like,
gone through two of them or
there's
something.
There's no more. Well, he started with the Ram.
Yeah.
And the Ram, you know, like when stuff starts going wrong, like the steering box.
Yeah.
Like stuff like what?
Control arms.
Like, why is the steering box going wrong? The steering box should never, you know, hey, I got to replace the rotors or the shocks or something. But when bizarre stuff starts going wrong, that's a bad vehicle.
Yeah. When you he just did not have luck with that truck, man.
But
that
also, thing is just... these Ram guys, I don't get it. Why even take the chance, man? Just get the Ford.
Yeah.
I mean, look, everyone makes a good new product now, but what I'm saying is I would find myself a Ford F-150 that was 4 years old with, you know, 61,000 miles on it and just go, screw it.
Yeah. Even maybe pick up a diesel or something.
Yeah.
Maybe get the bigger truck if you...
Yeah.
If and you're into that.
Dedicate it. Just leave it. Easy. And they're...
And then when the company does well, you can get rid of your Jeep and get something nice.
Terms of bang for your buck, and they've literally have broke this down, like, per pound, it's like the best vehicle you can buy.
And they sell a lot, like a million a year. Just like, there's plenty of used trucks.
I had my dually pull up in my driveway today. It's like, I bought that thing for like 26 grand or something 4 or 5 years ago. It's still fine. You know, it's like, it's just a big old truck used for everything. It's no, I mean, for the price of a new Mini Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? I don't get it. I'd just go, diesel if you can. Go a couple years old. Get that Ford.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I don't go. The guys who get their King Ranch and stuff. Like, I don't like. I was talking to Rob, and he's like, "My dad bought a Ford King Ranch Eldorado 7. It's got the wood paneling and the bed and stuff and everything. It's the black version or something." And I was like, "How much? 87 cash. $87,000? 87 cash. It's always weird, too, when guys that you know don't make a ton of money, like, you know, his dad does okay. He probably makes 100 grand a year or something, but he's paying, I wouldn't pay 87 cash for a Ford truck.
Right.
And he's like, 87 cash. And I'm like, 87 cash?
Yeah.
Cash. Cash? Cash. He paid 87 cash? Cash. Well, he traded in his Ram, and they gave him 51 on that. Okay, wait, Rob.
And it was paid for?
The 27th time I say 87 cash, that is your window to now step in and go, well, no, he traded in his big dually whatever, and they gave him 40 for that. So it's back 40 out of probably 77, and now we're at 37, and that's...
That's the cash
that's
part
the cash.
That you said nine times.
As I tell everyone all the time, once I say something for a third time, that is your opportunity to stop and examine what you're saying. Let's not stay the course at that point.
Oh.
But still, the guys that are forking out the big bucks for the new trucks, schmucks. Alone, man. You'd be a schmuck if you didn't watch Alone. Back for a fourth season with a crazy new twist, man. The rules have changed. There are 10 survivalists. They're dropped in the middle of an unforgiving wilderness. But now there's 5 teams competing. So they pair them up. They got brothers, fathers and sons, a married couple. It's a different kind of survival show. Besides their teammates, they're completely alone. So there's no cameraman. There's no crew there. No one handing them a granola bar or a towel. No, they're truly alone. They film themselves. No gimmicks, no forced challenges. Teams are split, equipped with 5 items each. To win, they must find each other and survive the wilds of North Vancouver Island the longest. $500,000 at stake. Then you buy, well, Rob's dad could buy 6.5 yeah. trucks.
By the way, North Vancouver sounds beautiful.
Yeah, well, it gets a little majestic on the other. The side we were on for Jimmy's bachelor party, smooth sailing. Yeah. The other side, where the seaplanes are landing, I think. Anyway,
oh, okay.
You tune in for all new episodes. That's Thursday, 10 o'clock, 9 central on History. All right. We got a question. Max Pata?
Yeah, of course. And if you guys want to write in, just go to carcastshow.com, click the contact page. This is from Manny. He's in Santa Barbara. Hey, Adam and Matt. Loved the show as well as the other content, Corolla Digital. I've noticed there's been a godly amount of talk about the 10-speed automatic transmission that you guys are talking about recently. I picked up a 2017 Camaro ZL1 equipped with a 6-speed manual. When all is said and done, which transmission option do you guys think will be the most desirable in the future, and which one would you opt for? Thanks, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, that ZL1, when you get it with the automatic, I think has the 10-speed.
Yeah.
That's their version of the high-performance 10-speed.
There's two answers. Whatever they made the less numbers of, and the manual always wins. I mean, historically, if you have a 19, and I don't even, you know, let's say you have a, trying to do some math here, which is, if you have a Boss 429 and it's an automatic, it's got to be worth, I mean, documented, not, you know, somebody swapped the tranny out or whatever. But if it was came from the showroom with an automatic, and I was going to say, I was going to use Shelby Mustang, like a 65, 66, but and we can look into it. You tell me. The Rent-A-Racers, the Hertz cars, all came with an automatic, I think. I don't know. I may be incorrect about that. But if you have one of those cars that's automatic, it's not worth as much as the one with the 4-speed.
Right.
And if you have a Boss Mustang 429 and it's automatic, and those cars are selling for $300,000, they could hit you to the tune of $50,000, possibly.
Yeah.
Documented.
I think you're starting to see that on some of the sort of the modern collectibles. Like if you're picking up your Ferrari 360, and with you'll see a million with that F1 transmission, and then you'll see one come up and go, hey, with the 6-speed,
right?
All of a sudden, I think that's the more desirable car.
Yeah. So for old and collector, I don't know that you're ever going to replace the 6-speed or the 5-speed or the 4-speed.
Yeah. You know, all the new car companies are saying, well, you know, the automatic or the paddle or whatever is faster. It's faster. It's faster. But it's not as much fun.
Yeah. So it's a different experience. And I would say you did the right thing with the 6-speed.
I think so.
That's
too.
That's what I would say. And I'm thinking about that vet with the sequential stick shift.
Yeah.
I like that, man. All right. Got another one, Max Spano?
Well, I just want to know how that McLaren was, Matt. Matt drove the new McLaren.
Yeah. Adam drove it as well with Sonny.
Yeah. We had a fun time. You know, it's so funny, but the sensation of speed and being pushed back into your seat is something that never really gets old, and it never gets old for anybody. Kids love it. Chicks love it. Like, everyone loves that feeling of being pushed back.
Yeah.
The feeling of going 200 miles an hour isn't really a feeling. That's just you're going 200 miles an hour. You could go 500 miles an hour in a Southwest flight, but the feeling of getting pushed back,
yeah,
that's the feeling.
It is.
I always just do my little 0 to 80 runs, just back and forth, 0 to 75. It's the sort of 3 miles an hour to 80 miles an hour, the fun part. Just going fast, is that evens out.
The car was cool to drive, but it was interesting because it was probably like the easiest to drive supercar we've had yet. Like, it was like the power was very linear, a little bit of turbo lag, so it didn't feel like as fast as it was actually going, but it's actually very fast. And it's funny because all these supercar companies now, their engine tuning, their transmission tunings, they do such a great job on that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when you get around to like the entertainment screen and things like that, like it gets a little buggy. Even in the McLaren, it was doing something on the radio I couldn't figure it out. And I just swapped it out the other day for the new Aston Martin DB11, which I love. It's gorgeous. The interior is gorgeous. It makes the right sound.
Today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow.
It makes the right sounds. It gets a little loose, like it's kind of loud and violent, like a supercar should be. But maybe it's just this particular car. You know, probably has a lot of press guy miles on it and stuff. But the AC vents don't have enough tension on them. So every time you're at a stoplight and you hit the gas really hard, the vents flop up.
First world problem.
Yeah, so it's one of these things where you're like, you know, you're driving and the temperature's nice and you hit the gas and you're like, where's my cold air?
But I love the cream and the navy blue.
Yeah, the blue and so the cream good. Interior is gorgeous. It's a pearl white exterior. It's nice. But now check this out. 12-cylinder, 5.2 liter, a little smaller, twin turbo 12.
Wow.
600 horsepower.
Wow. That's all good now, man. Stu, 46, Studio City, man.
Hey, Smoderator, what's happening?
What's going on?
Hey, so I got a question regarding my motorcycle engine. I sent you some photos. I was loading it up on the trailer, and as I was doing it, got a little bit punchy with the gas, and we bottomed out, and I caught one of the cooling fins on the bottom of the engine housing, and it snapped off, and it actually tore the thing off and tore a hole in the bottom of the housing. So this one doesn't have an actual pan, so you'd have to replace the entire housing to repair it. The guys, you know, told me, well, you should probably take it to a welding shop and have them weld it back on. That seemed like a pain, and if that happens again, it seems like it would be a fragile repair. So what I did was I took some JB Weld, the really good stuff, the 3500 pencil strength,
yeah,
and I tore off a piece of steel wool, the super fine grade 400 stuff, soaked it in that, used that as a plug in the hole, and then patched it over. And I'm just wondering if you guys think that I should probably just drill that back out as a long-term fix, or if this would be a stable repair, if you guys take a look at it. And just, I wanted to get a second opinion.
Yeah, we're looking at some pictures, although it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
The only thing that worries me is when things get hot, they expand, and then when they cool, they contract, and then they get hot again and they expand and they contract. So they cycle, you know, and when they cycle, obviously there's an opportunity for stuff to go south.
Yeah. What's the heat range on JB Weld?
It's good according to the box up to 500, which means you know it's good for at least 750, probably 1,000.
Yeah,
yeah, and, but your engine's never going to get that hot.
And the what kind of bike is it?
It's an old CHP bike. It's a BMW R1200 RT.
Tell you, I talked to a cop once about those bikes, because back when there was a time when they ran Harleys and they ran the BMWs, and he was like, I said, what's the price difference? He said, the BMW is more than twice the price,
yeah,
but it needs no maintenance.
So maybe in the long run, it's not twice the price.
Yeah. It's interesting. I love those chippy BMWs, though,
yeah,
by the way. So that's a good bike.
It's a blast to ride.
I like what you did. I like where your head's at, Stu. I like a JB Weld, and I like the impregnated, the wool, steel wool, yeah, with JB Weld plan. And I would say two things. I would say keep an eye on it. You know, heat cycle it a few times and hit it with a trouble light and really take a good look at it and see what was happening. I would also say that if you wanted to skim it with a flexible, like 100% silicone, like gasket material. I mean, not the orange stuff, but something that I like the idea of a membrane over it too, that has a lot of expand and contraction ability.
Okay.
And I might,
yeah, right,
I might just spoon a little that over
it. Like a high temp silicone.
Yeah.
It looks like in the picture you broke off like the smallest fin on the entire thing, right? Like just the one on the end. That's, you know, I think you're going to be fine.
My concern is the vibration and the heat expansion and contraction, like you said. But, you know, welding that back on, because it's so small and there were so many frag pieces that broke out, and if I hit that again, that weld could just snap off again.
I'm with you. And you might want to get a little die grinder with a little carbide tip or something and just smooth it over. Make it look good. But do me a favor.
Yeah.
The guy, the, you know... There's nothing worse than the guy who gets the cop bike and then wears the cop helmet too, the two-tone helmet.
Yeah, don't.
Then he puts a stupid black blazer on, a stupid black windbreaker on, and he just rides at 54 miles an hour behind you, and you just look in your rear view like, what? I cannot tell you. I hate these assholes.
Yeah,
that's not you.
Oh,
is
no,
it Stu?
Yeah, I don't do that.
No, good.
I wear a blue. I wear a totally different color helmet. You know, totally different color jacket. The whole thing.
He has a pink helmet.
Good. Is this an actual cop bike? Like from the?
Yeah,
it's
a retired. It's a retired CHP bike. It has like 140,000+ miles on it. But you know, the thing's a blast to ride, man. I use it for the cone competition stuff. I do that on the side for fun. And since it had the crash bars built into it, I'm like, well, this makes it easier than trying to bodge crash bars onto my other bike. So
right.
In Santa Monica, I see the cops training. Mm-hmm. They go to the beach, and there's a huge parking lot with none of the little parking blocks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they cone it out, and all the cops on their motorcycles go around the cones and really slow.
You got to slow for the cone zone, man. You know, come on. Don't you read the signs?
They're out there practicing, having a good time in the beach. Nice, beautiful day.
Yeah, and we're paying for it.
Yeah.
How about, I hope they have insurance. I hope they have Geico, man. You want to save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? It's easy. Go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Why wouldn't you want to do this, everybody? Go to geico.com, put a little extra money in your pocket, maybe buy yourself a nice used BMW cop bike at an auction with all that money you're saving. Geico.com, 15 minutes, could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. It is Geico. All right, live shows, Las Vegas, Caesar's Palace. You won't want to miss that. That's July 13th. And we're going to hang out afterward and have some drinks, take some pictures, and kiss some babies, all that good stuff. Go to Chassis, Chassy. We have movies on there. I think we got some T-shirts and some mugs and all that kind of stuff. We got the Reasonable Doubt Town Hall. That's going on Thursday, July 20th. That's me and Garrigus over at his restaurant.
Wow.
Shift and Steer, subscribe at Podcast One today. And tonight, or tomorrow night, I should say, sorry, the after party. The Corolla Drinks bar crawl is sold out, but the after party is still open. So you go to CorollaDrinks.com. Chris Plang, Lynette's going to be there, Ray's going to be there. It's going to be good. All right, and support the show, man. If you want to go to CarCastShow.com, click through our Amazon banner, bookmark that, all that. So, until next time, Adam Kroll for Matt, the Motorator DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com. The Corolla Drinks Seattle Bar Crawl is sold out. But don't worry, you can still party with us at the Showbox Soto Lounge. Saturday, June 24th, Lynette Corolla, Ray Oldhoffer, Jay Miller, Gary, Kalen, Dylan, Nick, Dawson, plus Loxy. And I'll pick up all your pieces, but I can't help you. Loxy at the Showbox Soto Lounge. Plus, special guest, Moon Darling. Tickets and more information at CorollaDrinks.com. Get your tickets now for Loxy and Moon Darling Saturday night at the Showbox Soto Lounge at CorollaDrinks.com.